Hello, welcome to the RTE Olympics podcast. On another glorious night for Irish swimming, an even more glorious night for swimming, Irish swimming. We're joined by Barry Murphy to reflect on Daniel Whiffen's gold medal in the 800-metre freestyle in an Olympic record time. Ireland's first ever male swimming medalist. Ireland's first gold medalist in swimming for almost 30 years. And in like one of the marquee events against, you know, defending Olympic champion who wouldn't go away. Barry, that was just incredible.
Yeah, that was the stuff of dreams, really. It's obviously been building up all week, and he's put himself out there as someone that is bringing home a medal. Like, he said those words. And to back it up, and in the fashion he's backed it up, was nothing short of incredible. Like, you know, when we all got into this sport, you know, I probably started in 1996, you know, after the wave of the success we saw in Atlanta. When we all got into the sport, we've dreamed of that moment. We've dreamed of seeing the tricolour being lifted up in the Olympic pool, and to hear Aimeron Navin. And Daniel Whiffen is the man to deliver it. And he delivered it in the most stylish fashion I've ever seen. My wife, yeah, two of us were sitting in our living rooms absolutely screaming. She couldn't believe he was like as confident to do his little entrance maneuver where he's writing down notes. And I said to her, look, as soon as he did that, I was like, he's winning this. There's absolutely no way he's dropping entrance moves and not gonna produce on the day. So look, it was brilliant. The race kind of fell into plan for him pretty perfectly. And I think, what, you know, some of the things that probably really helped was that he raced Whittington, the Australian, already in the heats. And he did, your man, the Australian, did the exact same thing. Went out like the flappers in the heats, probably brought the field along with him a little bit. And that kind of suited Daniel. The lane four position, I was worried about Bobby Fink the entire way, because we know how Bobby Fink swims. He just stays in the pack, tries to fly under the radar, and then drops the hammer on the last 50. And he did it again today. And I was like, oh my God, he's going to do it again, this Bobby Fink lad. What an absolute nightmare. But Daniel's tone tough. And in fact, he pulled away in the last 15 meters. He actually changed his stroke completely, put the head down, didn't take a breath after doing that for 780 meters. It was incredible. And I was in awe of this young man, in awe of how he's developed over the last number of years, in awe of him, the confidence to come out and say what he was going to do and then go and do it is nothing short of incredible. And for him to deliver Aimeron Navin in the Olympic pool, stand on top of the podium where we got to see the tricolour be raised, it was brilliant. Like, couldn't be so proud for him and his family, so proud for all the people that kind of helped him along the way, and so thankful to him that he was able to give us a glimpse of what that was like and to fulfill all of our dreams. So it was brilliant.
Oh, it was incredible. His confidence, it's almost, I would have said beforehand, it's disgustingly un-Irish, but I would like to think he's just created a new kind of Irish identity. You would like to think in swimming and in Olympics, where we do have this belief that we can do these things, break Olympic records, win gold medals, and the best bit is, no, we're going to do it before we do it. That's the bit. I think that's Olympic records. Yeah. We don't get them. But for a guy to come out and, as you say, almost signpost is that I'm winning this, and if I don't win it, I got to be ashamed of myself, was basically what he said. It was just, we don't see that. That's not something that we do.
No, we don't see that. And you know, it's not in our nature as a nation to be like that. It's probably something that's maybe developed over the last couple of years with some sports stars. He's just grabbed it by the horns and being like, yeah, this is how it's going to be. Watch this. And yeah, I mean, it's going to happen, so don't even worry about it. So I don't know what we were all stressed about. Like, he was just, he's been guaranteeing it for a while. But it's just so good to see. Like, the first time I really took notice of him was at the 2021 Olympic trials. And I was surprised that he put in the performance to make that team at such a young age. And again, he was just like, oh yeah, you know, I was just going to do this. Then he did a PB at the Olympics, and I thought, geez, that's impressive. You know, a young guy stepping onto the scene, swimming his best time, swimming fast, placing in the top 16. Fair play to him. And honestly, every year he's just got better and better. And he just keeps talking about, yeah, I just want to be the Olympic champion. So it's so matter of fact, it's scary. And it's amazing to see. You know, it's so good. Hey, I don't think he really, like, we don't realize the effect that now this is going to have on Irish women. We're going to probably be sitting in here in like 20 years' time, and we're going to be commentating on people who this guy has inspired to get into the pool. You know, it's going to have that sort of, that's a, such a profound effect. We've never seen a man on top of the Olympic podium in the pool. And, you know, for him to do that, it's going to just send shockwaves through Irish women. The clubs are going to be out the doors for the next couple of years, hopefully.
Barry, I have a 7-year-old that managed to get into swimming lesson in Greystones. I cannot get my 5-year-old into a lesson. I may give up now. I'm just telling her, you're not going to the water. You're never going to learn to swim. I'm sorry. That's it. You're done. Because I'm never going to be able to get you near a pool.
Yeah, people are asking me, do I know anyone? I'm just like, no, sorry. but yeah, we're going to have to get more pools built. You know, we're going to need the Daniel Whiffen Swim Center somewhere so we can,
on the Armagh down border. Listen, let's listen to the man himself, his post-race interview with my colleague, Paul O'Flynn.
Daniel, you're the Olympic champion. How does it feel?
I mean, amazing. I mean, what's my name? Sorry, Daniel Whiffen, Olympic champion. Oh, mate, sorry, it's really good. I can't believe it. But to be fair, I can't thank anybody else other than my brother Nathan and my parents and my whole coaching staff at Loughborough and the Irish team. I couldn't do it without anybody, and it's definitely not, I'm not alone out there. That was such a good effort.
Tell us about the race. It was an incredible race. We knew from a long way out that you had a medal, just not sure what colour. Tell us about what was going through your mind in those closing stages.
I'm not gonna lie, I'm not sure you can see me looking, but I was looking for Bobby Fink the whole time. I was like, I didn't get caught last 50. I've been practicing my whole fucking year for this. I will not get caught last 50. So I was just looking over, and I saw I got a body up, and I was like, oh, this is over, I've won.
An Olympic record as well.
Yeah, I know, pretty crazy. I mean, it wasn't that fast of an Olympic record, but I know another one tied to the books. I think I've won everything so far. I've won double world champ, European champ, and now the Olympics, and now I can say that I'm probably one of the best ever, so it's just even better.
Absolutely. Congratulations, Daniel, go and collect your medal.
Thank you.
Just the way he described the end of it, you know, I'm not going to lie, I was looking for Bobby Fink the whole time. I can't get caught last 50 metres. I've been training all fucking year for this. I will not get caught last 50. I kept looking over and I saw and I got by him and I knew it was over. I had won. Like, to be even able to like to verbalise it like that, because it was that close. I can't get over how close these 800 meter, 16 lengths of the pool. And there is, you know, less than 600ths of a second, point 0.6 of a second between them, 0.5 of a second between them. Crazy.
Yeah. Crazy, 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 crazy. And look, it's good. I think, you know, what he's done over the last couple of years is get that international experience. And yeah, we all know, everyone knows what Bobby Fink is going to do. It was just like, can he stop him doing it? That was the big thing. And the fact that he's just said, I've trained all year for this, that he knows Bobby Fink is going to be running him down at the end and he's going to have to just hold him off. Like, that was in his mindset. When all those sets got hard, probably was picturing, you know, his brother Nathan being Bobby running down in the pool. So yeah, whenever it gets hard, he knew exactly how this was going to play out. He just manifested really his own reality. And all that work he put in was picturing Bobby Fink running him down. And he knew, based off the work, this is what we've done. This is the repetitions we've had. All those countless, countless early mornings and kilometers was for this moment. And it all paid off. It was unbelievable. And honestly, I had to sit down after the race. Like, I was so shook. And yeah, it's just incredible stuff. Really incredible stuff.
Yeah. I was trying to do maths there and I realized the Olympic website actually gives you the time behind right next to the guy in second place. It was 0.56 of a second. So that's what there was between them. And back to Paltrinieri is 1.19. Because for a while there, it looked like Paltrinieri was going to do it. Like, he kind of... He was going to hold him off, because he's the guy with the probably the most stamina. He's a long, long distance specialist, isn't he? So it looked like he might do it, but Daniel found the reserves from somewhere. And John Kelly in commentary said, like, Daniel, he didn't go to his legs for about 400 meters. Like, that's insane. He was pulling himself up the pool by his arms. He wasn't using his legs. So he was saving them, basically. Is that it?
Pretty much, yeah. Like again, he knew Bobby was coming. You know, I think we spoke earlier in the week, like you're never going to have it all your own way in the Olympic final. You're going to have to dig deep to do, you know, achieve the goals you want to achieve. So he knew that kick was coming from Fink. And so he was probably just holding off thinking, yeah, I'm comfortable in here. I've got a 2-beat kick. I'm feeling strong in my arms and shoulders. I'm okay. I need to keep these legs for when Bobby kicks. So I can kick too, and then the race will really start then at sort of 780 meters into it. So it's absolutely wild. But it's brilliant. Oh my God, it's brilliant. It's brilliant. You know, we've had such an incredible week with Mona yesterday, Daniel today. There's more to come from these two as well. Like, you know, we've got Mona in 200. He's got the 1500 and the 10. Like, honestly, I think we're just getting started. And I just am so in awe of what this young man has done and what he's achieved. And yeah, I'm so excited to see like how all this is going to unfold and the path he's actually opening up for himself, because he's written himself into the history books. He's helped us to realize our dreams of seeing that tricolor be raised and hearing Aaron Levine. And yeah, it's, you know, it's onwards and upwards for Daniel Whiffen.
Absolutely. And you know, Barry, like, you know, we've only been talking to each other and doing these podcasts for like 3 days. And I'd like to point out it kind of coincides with the most glorious, you know, period in modern Irish swimming. So I think, you know, we may have played our part. I wouldn't want to be presumptuous there.
That's it.
Yeah. We'll have to keep it up. Thank you very much, Barry. Just to mention everything else that happened, unfortunately, a lot of it is going to seem a bit of a footnote. India beat us in the hockey, unfortunately, there. Bad run of results against the best teams in the world continues. No luck for Lyle in the dressage. Rowers Phil Doyle and Darragh Lynch did make it into double sculls final. Our sailors are second overall with 3 races to go, going very well. Rachel Darrell lost in the badminton. Jennifer Lahan unfortunately lost in the boxing. The rugby sevens team also lost. And there was mixture in the canoe slalom. Noel Hendrick has advanced to the K1 semifinals. Michaela Corcoran has not. But let's be honest, all the headlines for the next couple of days are going to belong to Daniel Whiffen. But in a moment, yeah. I am speaking to Annalise Murphy just to have a look at Robert Dixon and Sean Wadiel's performances down in Marseille. So hold on for that. Welcome back. I've been joined by Annalise Murphy to discuss Sean Wadiel and Robert Dixon's Skiff / 49er campaign thus far. They're 3/4 of the way through the qualification races, or 12 qualification races, and they are currently in third place overall.
Annalise, in second place overall. The Kiwis had a really bad day, so the boys actually stayed in second.
Did they? Oh, you've got information that wasn't to my hand.
The final race has gone up. They were ninth in the final race.
Ah, they were indeed. They were. Yes, that's fantastic. So yes, they are. They have 67 total points versus 51 for the Spanish. But I don't know whether you go by total points or net points. This is why we have you here, Annalise, because this is a mystery to a lot of people. Is it total points or net points?
it's net points. Total points is good to see off, to see if you have another really bad race or a disqualification, what your total points are. But it's net points. So sailing, you get to discard your worst result from the series, which is put in for, because there's so many variables in sailing, from, you know, disqualifications for being over the start line or crazy wind or equipment failure. They give everyone gets one drop, which is but so that you can have that one bad race and still be okay. So the boys, they have a disqualification, which they've used their discard for. So any more bad races, they have to count them.
But yeah, it's that was in the final race yesterday, the sixth race overall, when the Spanish crew, who coincidentally are now winning, objected to something that the Irish lads did in that race, even though the Spanish ended up finishing second and the Irish finished 21st. So clearly, whatever the Irish did didn't hamper the Spanish too much, and it wasn't advantageous to Dixon and Wadi Love. So what happened there, Annalise?
So Rob and Sean, they infringed the Spanish at the windward mark, which is the first one as you're going around after going upwind. They tacked inside the zone and the Spanish protested them over it. And probably normally in a normal competition, when someone beats someone else in a race, they normally won't be bothered to protest them because it's a bit of effort. You have to come in off the water, you have to fill in all these forms, you have to go into a jury room. And once you go into jury room, there is actually a possibility you could end up losing yourself because you thought you were in the right, but you're actually in the wrong. But then when it just comes down to Olympic Games, like the Spanish crew, they're really experienced. And like they're thinking about big picture here. They're thinking about what happens if we don't protest Rob and Sean and they beat us to an Olympic medal on the final day. So it's very ruthless and cutthroat. So, but they protested the guys and it meant Rob and Sean, I think they had an eighth in that race and it meant they got disqualified from it. So it became a 21st.
Right. So yeah, I get you. But it knocks you down to 21st when you're disqualified.
Because they'd had such a good first six races, like bad races at all. And sailing, it's a real game of consistency. It's not about winning all the races. It's about plugging away just good scores every day. Some ways that I describe sailing, it's kind of similar to golf in terms of it's a low point scoring system. And it's not about getting loads of eagles. It's about getting lots of pars and then the occasional birdie. And that's how you do really well. And in sailing, it's the same. It's getting lots of, you know, fifth to tenths and then the odd first or second or third. And that's how you actually end up winning at the end of the regatta.
Yeah, I'm looking at the scores here now on the Olympics website. And as I've displayed a couple of times already, sailing ain't my sport, and that's why you're here. But I'm seeing the Spanish, you know, they were doing okay. A 16th in the first race, 6th, 4th, 5th, 11th to the 5th race. And then from the 6th to the 9th race, 2nd, 3rd, 2nd, 2nd. Whereas the Irish and the New Zealanders, really good results in those first 5 races. And then maybe they've dropped off today. Is it something to do with the conditions? Is it less windy? Do the Irish and the Kiwi lads like it windier than the Spanish, or is that very simplistic?
Actually, the other way around. So the first
days, yet again, damn it.
The first 2 days have been really light winds. And I've heard from a Kiwi friend that those Kiwi sailors, Isaac and William, that their speciality is that really light drifting wind. So I was expecting today there was going to be a little bit more wind. So I thought they would have a harder day today. Well, Rob and Sean, even though they're very good in light winds, I'd actually consider probably one of their strengths to be in the medium to strong winds. So I thought today was going to be a good day for them. And they did have a good day. It was, I think it was quite difficult out there. And I think the wind was dying off and getting a bit tricky as they were sort of finishing their last race particularly. But the Spanish guys, super experienced. They're here. They haven't won a medal yet and they're here to try and win a medal. And yeah, once the breeze probably picked up a bit, they were just kind of on fire then with that. So they're a very good team. But again, still 3 more races tomorrow. They have to, you know, in the 49er, it can very easily go. If you have 2 bad races in a row, suddenly you're way back down the fleet.
Yeah. So they've got 3 races left for 12 in total. Top 10 make it into the medal race. And as you said, everyone gets to discard that one race, which for Robert and Sean is that 21st place for the disqualification. So at the moment, they're still second. There's 3 races left. Would you be relatively confident they're going to make it into the medal race here, barring catastrophe?
I think so. They've just proved they've sailed so well over the mix of conditions that they've been given so far that going into the medal race tomorrow, or going into hopefully Thursday's medal race, like they should be there and in, you know, in with the fight of the medals, which is really exciting. And I think something as well that's confusing for people. So they call it the medal race, but you still count all of your races up to that point. So like Rob and Sean, if they have a really good day tomorrow, they could go into the medal race with the medal already guaranteed. Like they could be doing a victory lap, like if they have really good. So that's so they'll be going out tomorrow trying to get like 3 really good races in to give themselves a really good fighting chance of either having that, you know, fighting for a medal, maybe even having a medal secured. And I think that's something sometimes that people will be like, oh, well, if they get into the medal race, I'm like, well, it's still, you still count all your points from your previous 12 races and the medal race, just the top 10 races. And it's much shorter and it's televised. It's very close to land. So actually, normally it's a bit of a stressful race because the wind will be quite fluky because they'll be trying to race you on the beach so as many spectators can see it as possible, but not the perfect place to race a sailing boat race.
Yeah, I think a lot of people will be very familiar, obviously, with your own Olympic career, silver in Rio. Mm-hmm. But of course, you tasted kind of the sharp side of a medal race in London in 2012 when you were seriously contending for gold and the medal race didn't go your way. So, like, as you say, it's all your previous races are taken into account, but the medal race is, it's still, it scores very highly, I suppose, is the way of putting it.
Scores highly, and it's very, you know, high pressure. And then also because they like to put them in these spectator friendly areas, it's actually normally a bit of a fluky place to sail. So it's suddenly quite stressful. You might have been sailing in quite sort of steady winds all week, and suddenly they're like, we're putting you in the harbour underneath a mountain with a stadium on the side.
So weird winds, weird currents, waves, yeah. Everything you don't want, I guess.
Yeah, but they're also, everyone knows it's coming. It's not, it's not a surprise. And Rob and Sean, they've been out training in Marseille so much over the last 2 years, and they'll have done loads of time on the medal race course in Marseille to get used to that medal race course. And they actually are under 23 world champions. Marseille a few years ago as well. So like, Marseille is a place where they perform at their best, which is, it's kind of great to see them like full circle from winning a underage world championship to being, you know, fighting for a medal in the Olympic Games.
Yeah. So they obviously came 13th in Tokyo. They've built on that since. And as you say, this is a course they're familiar with, and you're pretty, you like the way they sail in a variety of conditions. So allowing for the fact that pretty much anything can happen in sailing, like, would you consider them, you know, medal contenders?
I think so. Like, the how they've performed so far this week, you can definitely consider them as medal contenders. Like, they're proving that they're up there with the best, if not the best in the world. And they're a team, they've been sailing together since they were teenagers. Like, it's a long time coming, you know, they've worked really hard. In Tokyo, they had a really hard time. They were sailing really well through the Olympics, and they got disqualified from two races for their harness being, I don't know, like 30 grams overweight. And it is their fault, for they had weighed the harness before and it had been the right weight, but they hadn't weighed it in humid conditions where it was retaining a bit more water and ended up being heavier.
I remember so that now.
It's a very hard pill to swallow. And when I sailed a 49er for a year, I used that harness because it's such a good harness, really comfortable, has really good back support. And they got done because they'd kept the back supports in their harnesses. And if they'd not had their back supports in the harnesses, they would have been way underweight. So it's, they should have been in the medal race in Tokyo, maybe finished, you know, sixth or seventh in their first Olympics. So I think they have that confidence. And they won two races in Tokyo. Another thing, the Tokyo Olympics, sort of the two big stars of the sport in 49er sailing, Pete Birling and Blair Tuke, they were a Kiwi pair. And then Dylan Fletcher in the GB boat, they both left the class. So it actually has given this younger generation a chance to now come through, having a couple of teams just dominating for sort of nearly 8-12 years.
It seems like there's more to it than what actually happens on the water. As you said, like, your preparation in terms of your equipment, and then the potential for courtroom drama afterwards. I'm kind of picturing it like, you know, when you have the stewards' inquiries in horse racing afterwards. I'm picturing, is that how it works? Do the two crews, do they have to go into a room with the judges? Do they, you know, do they make their cases, etc., and watch the video evidence?
Exactly. It's so sailing, it's, I guess it's such a tactical and strategic sport, and there's hundreds of rules, and you do need to know the rules very well. But then the Irish team also have like a really good rules advisor that also helps them out with everything. And in this like really tight racing, particularly when there's only 20 boats racing at the Olympics, it's so close, you do get into tight situations with other teams. So they would have come in off the water yesterday and they would have been like, oh, we had a tight call with the Spanish, but we think we're going to be okay, maybe. And then they would have gone and looked at the notice board and realized, no, the Spanish are protesting them. So then they would have sat down with the rules advisor. They would have gone through, you know, what their options were. And then they would have had to go into the protest room and sort of fight their side of the case. And it is, yeah, it does come down. There'll be a jury sitting in front of you, and you have to say why you think you're right, or the other team will say why they think they're right and why you're wrong, to try and get you thrown out of the race. And I used to hate it. I was like, I did everything to avoid being in protests because I just, but then it also kind of would, you know, I'd nearly avoid confrontation on the water, which also meant I probably lost places as I was going around. But the guys, like, they wouldn't be in many protests. They're very clean sailors, and yeah, it's unfortunate, but it is also, that's part of when you're up at the, I guess, pointy end of the fleet, it does get tight like that. And particularly fighting for Olympic medals, you know, everyone's going to take everything they can.
Yeah, sailing, let's be honest, has a slight reputation. So I'm imagining, is the rules advisor for the Team Ireland, is he a solicitor or a barrister? And are all the people in that room afterwards, bar the sailors, all solicitors and barristers? I have this impression of a very, very difficult argument to win.
It's everyone's very serious about it. And like when you're racing, you're just like, the rules are rules. You know, you're just like, you're getting on with it. But then when it actually kind of comes down to it, like when I was still competing, like we used to do like rules quizzes to see if everyone actually knew the rules that well, because there's so many different scenarios. And when boats come together, there's the obvious ones, port and starboard, which I know most people might know, it's starboard has right of way over port, but that's kind of the simple version. And then there's hundreds of things on top of that and hundreds of scenarios on top of that. It's yeah, they're like the rules advisor the Irish team has is he's one of the best in the world. And I'm sure it means the lads, they definitely went in with the best possible chance of getting off their protest. But it was, again, going to be very hard when the Spanish, their witness was the official jury. That's when I saw that, I was like, that's going to be difficult to win that case. It's very hard to, once the jury have sided against you.
But, yeah. Just finally on this thing, because I do find it fascinating. Yep. The Spanish objected. So where did Diego and Florian, as they're out sailing, did they take note of it and say, Irish lads, cut us off? Or would it have been their coaches and the team management watching the feed who have said, oh, we should protest the Irish?
So you have to actually notify the other team at the time of the incident that you're going to protest. So there'll
you be shout from one boat to the other.
You'll shout protest. And then, but the thing is, so you have to do this, or because you can't protest someone if you haven't told them at the time of the incident that you're going to protest them. But it means in every small instant, people shout protest so they can just cover themselves. They might have no intention of ever protesting you, but they'll shout protest, because it means then in hindsight, when they decide, actually, I do want to protest.
Yeah, you give yourself the option.
You can. So yeah. So that's why, like Rob and Sean, I'm sure the Spanish, yeah, I'm sure they let them know that gave them a good shout.
And fantastic.
But it is like you'll have close calls all the time, and sometimes people will shout protest at you when you know there's no incident at all, and they're just chancing their arm trying to like distract you or something like that as well. So there's like sailing, it's a lot of like mind games as well, and you're always trying to figure out, you know, sometimes people like they don't want to mess you over on the course and they'll let you go, or sometimes they just want to make your day as hard as possible, even if it actually isn't making sense for them. So, and when it gets to the Olympics, I think everyone is under so much pressure that, you know, people make mistakes that they normally wouldn't make, just because it's this, like, particularly sailing, the Olympics is the one competition. Mm. It's the only reason everyone sails at Olympic level or in Olympic classes is for this games that's on every 4 years. So it's a huge deal. And yeah, everyone's under high strain, I guess.
I'm loving this now. I'm getting a lot more into it now. Tell me then, just briefly then, for the rest of the Olympics, we have Finn Lynch and Eve McMahon both going in the dinghy class. Eve is only 20, I think. It's her first Olympics. Finn would have sailed in Tokyo. How would you rate their chances?
Yeah. Eve's 20, so her first Olympics. She's like a super, you know, superstar coming through the youth system. She won everything.
She seems very confident.
Under 18 level, she just crushed all her her competitors. And then again, at under 21 level, she's double world champion already. And I think she still has another year to go at under 21 level if she wants. Mm. And she's going here though for her first Olympics. She's got a very like sort of switched on head, you know. She knows that this is to gain experience. She wants to do really well. She's just such a competitor, but she's also very realistic. She knows where she is at the moment, and she's going here to get really good races, get a really good experience. And if she makes the medal race, I think it'll be a huge success for her this Olympics. And she definitely has the potential to do that. And, you know, the Olympics, some people might sail badly, and, you know, Eve could, you know, if she can sail at her best, you know, she has a chance of doing really well. And then Finn Lynch, he actually didn't qualify for Tokyo. He went to Rio as a 20-year-old.
Pardon me, yeah.
And he just freaked out for the Tokyo qualification events and didn't qualify. So he qualified there for Paris, which was, I think, a huge deal for him to finally do it. And then he's been kind of in great form since missing out on Tokyo. He was second at the World Championships. And then just this year, earlier on this year, he was third at the European Championships. So he is medal potential, and he's going to Paris to try and win a medal. Again, it's the laser class, but it's now called the ILCA, which is International Laser Class Association. I don't know, they change things all the time to confuse everyone, but it's the hardest class at the Olympics. It's the laser is such an accessible boat for everyone around the world that there's a good person from every single country. So he's going to have to fight all week, but you know, he's also, I think Marseille is a good venue for him as well, so he can probably perform pretty well there. And it's exciting for the two of them, getting to her first Olympics and Finn getting to his like redemption Olympics nearly.
Yeah. Well, look, hopefully it goes well for him tomorrow, and then with the medal race on Thursday. We have to keep track of that on RTE2, and Lisa will be offering some analysis, I would imagine. And of course, on RTE Radio and the RTE app and the RTE Sport website with our live trackers, exclusive highlights. You'll see it there. And that's it for this evening's podcast, or this morning's, whenever you listen to it. Back again tomorrow. Before I go, I've been trying to come up with an interesting story about a sport every night, Annalise. Yeah. But it's more a fact this evening, because when we talk again, I'm going to make far fewer mistakes than I did today. You've educated me. But one thing I do know, because I'm from Wexford, is that Finn Lynch is from Carlow. And we think that's interesting because Carlow, as most people will know, does not have a coast. So everyone says, fair play to Finn Lynch. He has made it to two Olympics, not Tokyo. He made it to Rio.
And he's made it to Paris.
From Langlois County. But I looked into it. It is a fantastic achievement, no doubt. But I was looking into it. Austria is a very, very landlocked country. It is surrounded by mountains and a lot of countries. They have 3 gold medals, 4 silver medals, and 1 bronze medal in sailing. I think that's phenomenal.
They're a very good sailing nation. They
how?
They do a lot of their sailing on like these like little lakes up in the mountains and things like that. It makes them very skillful. They have to really understand the wind, I think, when it's coming down. And Finn Lynch, he learned to sail in Blessington Lake. Up in Blessington Sailing Club. Ah. That's actually also where I learned to sail as well. So it's funny that you know, a little lake up in Wicklow
produced 2 Olympians.
Yeah. So
That's good knowledge. I like that. As a Wexford man who now lives in Wicklow, I will take that now as my little tidbit from the Olympics for today. Annalise, yeah. Thank you very much for joining us. And I'm hoping I will catch up with you again over the course of the Olympics when we've got lots of good sailing stories, which I will be able to comprehend. Thank you very much.
Thank you.